In the 6 days we were in Chicago, 55 people were shot, 16 were killed. We were struck by just how routine it felt. We were also struck by what we learned about police activity. With murders going up, police activity is down dramatically.
When you have activity falling off the way it is and crime skyrocketing, that's a huge problem.
Some people looking at the Chicago Police Department have said it's in crisis.
Crisis is a good word. When people are dying, yes, there's crisis. No two ways about it.
WGN. Gary McCarthy on 60 Minutes last night. Let's bring in the former Chicago Police Chief, Gary McCarthy. Gary, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Good, man. Watching 60 Minutes last night, it finally hit me. We live in Chicago. We hear about these murders every single day. Murder seems normal now for all of us, and it shouldn't be that way.
Yeah, that's correct. That's correct. And it's really frustrating that we have backslid to the place that we've reached because we're making progress. It's not always a straight line. Sometimes it's a bumpy road. But, you know, we had the two best years since 1965 back to back in 2013 and 2014. Complaints against officers were down. Crime was down. Police-related shootings were down by 68% during my tenure. Nobody would know that, right, because it's not that important.
Right, of course. I mean, you're a stat guy. When we talked in the past, when you were the police chief here in Chicago, you loved bringing in these stats because you don't hear about the good things. But they mentioned something last night on 60 Minutes as killings rose, police activity fell. In August of 2015, cops stopped over 49,000 people. A year later, it dropped to 8,800 people. And you said why, and I want you to share that with the people listening right now.
Yeah, and you know, I'm glad you're asking me that, people, because when I actually rewatched this episode last night at 3 o'clock in the morning when I was feeding with my son and couldn't sleep. And my criticism is kind of simple. It's that 60 Minutes laid out the what. They laid out what's happening in Chicago. They didn't really delve into the why. And the why it's happening is because of the political environment that's been created in this country by a number of people, whether it's elected officials, community leaders, community groups, the media. But I go straight to the Department of Justice. And you know, that was a two-hour interview that I did with 60 Minutes. And if you saw me for 2 minutes, I think, on the show, it was a lot.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And the bottom line is this. When you look at what's happening in Chicago, the Department of Justice is here investigating the patterns and practices of the Chicago Police Department. And they will tell you proudly that they've opened more investigations into civil rights violations in departments in the last 8 years than any other time in the U.S. presidency. They've been politicized. And when they come to a place like Chicago, one of the standards that they use, this is only going to take me a minute, so just please bear with me. One of the standards that they use is stop data. Who are we stopping? And they say that we're disproportionately stopping African Americans. The standard that they use to make that determination is the population demographics. Now, that's absolutely preposterous, because if you look at a place like Englewood, which is the most violent community in the city of Chicago, it's 97% African-American. And in that violent community, they expect us to stop 32% white folks to reduce crime, because that's the population demographics of the city of Chicago. The standard that's supposed to be applied is what the Supreme Court says, which is that we can stop people based upon something called articulable reasonable suspicion. So the officers are under attack for who they're stopping, even though they're stopping them at the right place, the right time, for the right reason,
right,
based upon crime data, experience, and observation, because the standard has been flipped. The politicizing of DOJ, and I've said it time and time again, the Department of Justice being politicized the way it is and being used as a political pawn is killing people in the United States of America.
Right.
Yeah.
And that is the perfect example, and that's what they didn't spend enough time talking about.
And I watched the show last night, too. We look at the stats, the homicide trend from last year, and it ended up 795 homicides versus 2015, which was 509. I mean, that's almost 300 more deaths in 1 year. And what you're talking about is that it's not getting better. Why is that, and how do we fix it, I think, is the bigger question, because those of us who live in Chicago, it has become the norm.
Well, the way you fix any problem is by first recognizing what the problem is. The police are not the problem in this country. If you took out the 20 or so police-related shootings that took place in 2016 in Chicago, we'd still have 4,300 people shot. Just think about that for a second. Police-related shootings are less than half of 1% of the shootings in the city of Chicago. But what the irony is that a movement to, quote-unquote, save black lives. Now, this is not talking about Black Lives Matter. They are definitely a part of it. But that entire movement has resulted in the fact that more black people are being killed because we are emboldening criminals. And you saw that on 60 Minutes when they showed the video of the gangbanger recording the police and taunting them while it was happening. You saw it when you saw the officer getting her head slammed into the ground.
Right.
And she had the conscious thought that I don't want to be the next viral video. And you see it time and time again. And the bottom line is there's a social and economic problem that exists in this country that's building up anger in the disenfranchised communities. And it's come out towards the police, which is the most visible forward component of a system that is failing in those areas. And, you know, I equate it to having shoulder surgery for a knee injury. You're not going to fix what's happening in Chicago if you think that you need to fix the police.
Right.
Now, the police have to do better. Don't get me wrong. But I've also seen press reports that say that I'm critical of the police. That's nonsense. The police are not doing the same things they did, but nobody's explaining why.
Gary, criminals now know that a lot of cops won't pull their weapons because of the backlash, like that video last night on 60 Minutes, and now they're becoming more daring and aggressive, aren't they?
Exactly right. The criminals are becoming emboldened, while the police at the same time are being hamstrung and rendered ineffective by things like a two-page stop report. Now, you got to realize that was legislated in Springfield. You saw that last night on 60 Minutes.
Mm-hmm.
There's a two-page stop report for something that used to be an index card. Now, just to do the stop and fill out the report could take 45 minutes to an hour. And in the meantime, the movement in policing over the last 15, 20 years that I recall was to cut down on paperwork so we could get officers out doing more proactive policing. There's so much accountability to go around for this.
Right.
It's absolutely unfair to put this on the police because I don't think the police even know what they're supposed to do in this environment. You can't possibly do all the things that management, in other words, like 2 years ago, I was pushing officers to do to get out of the car and do proactive policing.
Mm-hmm. We're talking about Gary McCarthy, former police chief of Chicago, gun laws. We've talked many, many times about gun laws in Illinois, about New York, L.A. Can you explain the difference between New York and Chicago, the gun laws? Because
it's real simple. You
would like stricter gun laws here in Chicago.
Right. So first of all, those stricter gun laws did not exist in 4.5 years that I was a police superintendent, yet we still got better results because we did more proactive policing. We were doing that proactive policing because we weren't hamstrung by the environment that officers are living in today. So let me be clear about that. But the bottom line is in New York City, you go to jail for illegal possession of a loaded firearm. Here in Chicago, you don't. As a matter of fact, possession of a loaded firearm is not even committed and not even considered a violent felony for sentencing purposes in the state of Illinois. In New York City, the best example I could give you, we just watched my New York Giants yesterday beat the Redskins. They're playing in the playoffs. Plaxico Burress was a receiver for the Giants who shot himself in the leg in a nightclub with an illegal gun. He went to jail for 2.5 years. He went to jail for 2.5 years. During my time here in Chicago, not one individual was prosecuted for a self-inflicted gunshot wound for illegal possession of a firearm. Judges give them things like probation and boot camp. We've seen last year, the year before, I should say, we started tracking what happened with gun arrests. And in the first quarter of 2015, we arrested 688 people. 692 times. How can that be? Well, we arrested the same people twice, four times.
Right.
On the first day of the second quarter, in other words, April 1st, 3 out of 4 of those individuals were already back out on the street. It is impossible to say that if you illegally possess a loaded firearm two times in a 90-day period, that you're not a public safety hazard. yet they're still back out on the street.
That's just crazy. It's crazy. 60 Minutes.
And they also, you know, the narrative has it that Chicago has the toughest gun laws in the country. It's nonsense.
No.
It's NRA rhetoric. That's what they've been saying for years, so it becomes true in people's minds.
They asked you last night on 60 Minutes if you were the scapegoat for Laquan McDonald, the video not being released, and you kind of skirted the answer. Are you the scapegoat, or were you the scapegoat?
You know, I don't like that word. If you look up scapegoat, what I believe it means is that you accept the blame for something that somebody else did. I don't like that word because that's, you know, am I angry about what occurred? Absolutely. I spent 35 years honing my craft and learning how to do this at a level that I never thought possible. I was a national leader in policing. And, you know, internationally I would go on trips and people would want to know what we were doing and why we were doing it. And I did skirt it because I don't want to assess blame for this. You know, politicians do what politicians do.
Mm-hmm.
It's politics. They don't do performance. So this was political fallout, and that political fallout is continuing today. Quite frankly, there's a witch hunt in the Chicago Police Department. An entire generation of individuals who we were training to bring up have been wiped out, and as a result, you know, guys like Eddie Johnson and some of the other folks who've been promoted into those positions were actually two levels down before. And I'm not sure, you know, that they had the maturation process that we were trying to give them to get to those positions. I love Eddie Johnson, promoted him twice. He's great. But you know what? It's a big job to be running the second largest police department in the country.
Right.
Big job to be in charge of patrol in the second largest police department in the country. And that maturation process didn't take place.
So, Gary, I'm sorry.
I was a subject of political fallout. If you want to call it a scapegoat, that's, you know, not a word that I use. People use that all the time. I just see it as a political circumstance, and I don't think it helped. I think it has worsened what's happening because officers do not feel that anybody has their back right now.
Right.
It's another reason why it's more difficult for them to go out and do their job.
They feel like they're on an island. I know many Chicago police officers, and you're exactly right. Absolutely.
Gary, I was talking about before it gets into police hands and talking about why Chicago is the root of the problem before these people have guns in hands and become criminals. Is it something we need to look at with parenting and with schools and before this even gets into police hands? Is there something we can do as a community before it gets to escalate to this amount of tragedy?
Yeah, absolutely there is. And it's a very complicated problem that a lot of people have worked on for a long time. And I love when people ask me the question, well, what can be done? And I say simply, as far as the policing is concerned, what can be done is what we were doing. We developed a system of policing that works really well. But as far as what happens beforehand, one of the things that dawned on me while I was here in Chicago is, you know, going out to community meetings and going to schools. And there's no more vocational schools. I don't think there are anyway. If there are, I don't really know about it. But the idea of getting a B average in high school and getting to go to college for free, at least the community colleges here in Chicago, is a great program. But you know what? You come out of a community college, and you still got to either A, go on and get your degree, but B, it's not that valuable. And why aren't we giving kids in these disenfranchised communities a skill? Why aren't we teaching them how to be a chef? Why aren't we teaching them something about automotives and how to repair cars, which, by the way, has changed so much since I was a kid. Everything's computerized. It would take a lot to catch up to that. Or construction or woodwork or whatever it is. I don't even think that they do shop anymore in the high schools. So we're not giving them the ability to fish, right? We're trying to give them a fish. We're trying to give them a degree.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's a step that we should actually be looking at here in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as the parenting goes, that's obviously an issue. Obviously an issue. And it's something that, you know, has been going on for a long time in disenfranchised communities. The breakup of the family unit, it has to do also with mass incarceration. It's such a complicated issue that it's like peeling back an onion.
Yeah.
And you have to take it step by step by step. The issue of mass incarceration is a big one. I think that we've made a mistake in this country with the quote-unquote war on narcotics. It should be a war on crime, not a war on narcotics. And my thinking has actually changed to lightening up narcotics laws so that we make room in prisons for people who need to be there for violent crimes, like gun possession, which is not even a violent crime in Illinois. So it's kind of a conundrum. There's a lot of things that can be done, but I think the biggest thing that we could do in the short term is instead of saying you get a B average, you go to college, let's start giving these kids some sort of skill that they can go out and get a job.
Gary, do you miss it? Do you miss being on the streets?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, it seems to get worse and worse and worse the further away it is, because I'm watching what's happening here. It doesn't have to be like that. It doesn't have to be the way it is.
Right.
And it's happening not because of the police, but because of the politics surrounding policing. And there's so much accountability to go around. And to see these men and women who I just think the world of, who put themselves in harm's way every single day, and that's not just a saying. You know, I've had friends of mine who got killed in the line of duty.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've had to go to the hospitals and talk to the families and not know if the officer was going to survive. And in a number of unfortunate cases, they didn't. I've had to deal with that tragedy, and it's real. And these men and women do it willfully. They do it because it's that important. They don't do it because it's a job. It's not a job. It's a vocation.
Right.
It's a calling, something more than that. And, you know, I mean, 35 years completely immersed in that culture, trying to save black lives the whole time, and just having it fall apart the way it has, it's just unconscionable to me. It doesn't have to be that way. And we can do something about it if we choose to. We got to start by recognizing what the heck is happening.
In 2017, Chicago is putting more police officers on the street. Will more police on the street make a difference?
You know, that woman who closed the show by saying more people not doing what needs to be done.
Ugh, broke my heart.
Is kind of heartbreaking.
Yes.
And to have a victim of gun violence like that, because she's a victim too, not just her son who was murdered. But to have a victim of gun violence be articulate to that degree, to recognize that if what we're doing isn't working, don't do more of it. You know, as I said from day one, when I came here, everybody said we didn't have enough police. And I said, no, we do have enough police. We have more officers per capita than any large department in the country except for three. And I forgot what they were, but it's not New York and Los Angeles. We have more police officers per capita in any large city in the country. So we have enough officers. It's what they're doing is more important and how they're managed. It's are they in the right place at the right time, at the right, doing the right thing. That's what it's all about. And that's what analytics are about. That's what data-driven policing is about. That's about putting more officers in places like Englewood on the overnight shift, on the weekends when it happens. It's not really brain surgery. It is a little bit complicated, but we know how to do this.
Mm-hmm.
And I do miss it. And if you gave me 1,000 more officers, I think I could have done more with them, honestly. But the physical realities of working in a municipal police department, everything changed in 2007 and 2008 when the finances of the country collapsed. And police departments have not recovered from that. When I was in Newark, I had to lay off 10% of our department at that time. It was terrible. So having more officers, if they're used in the right fashion, would be fantastic. But I don't see that changing right now because, like I said, there's too much against these men and women.
Yep.
Too much, you know, they just can't get their feet underneath them, I don't think, right now.
And, Gary, how are you doing? You had a new baby.
I did. I'm very tired. let's see. I went to bed at about 5 o'clock. I got up at 8 o'clock to call you to talk to you guys. So
I appreciate that.
Yep.
Yeah, he's really, it's wonderful. It's unbelievable how great it is. It's exhausting, but it's great.
Wait,
and,
I just want to make sure I heard that correctly. So you wake up in the middle of the night and do the feedings for the new baby?
Yeah, we kind of switch it up.
Wow.
I'm like a 20th century, 21st century guy, Pete.
Are you changing diapers and the whole deal?
Hell yeah. Well, I figured he's going to be changing mine one day, so I might as well change his.
It always comes back, doesn't it? Gary, congratulations on the new baby. It's great to talk to you again. I appreciate it, man.
Same here.
Thank you so Thank much. You.
Talk to you soon.
Mm-hmm. Take care.
Former police chief Gary McCarthy at 720 WGN.